Well, welcome, welcome. I'm Christy Hagen, and I have a treat for you today. You're about to hear an expert interview of Bill Slosky, a well-known SEO, writer, researcher, and a kind of a legend in his own right. And he has been in the industry for as long as we have here at SearchEngineNews.com, which is 17 years now. Do I have that right, Bill, 17 years?
I think that it's tough telling because you sort of have to figure out when search engines really started getting popular and played into how I was promoting websites. So maybe that first email I got from a friend's sister that said she was selling computers at Digital Equipment Corp, and they started up a website called Alta Vista. And she sent an email saying, hey, you might like this, and got the email and saw that you could add like one page at a time to Alta Vista, and started adding pages and figuring out how it worked. And I guess that was the start of me doing SEO.
Right. Well, yeah, and that's how we always say it too. Well, we've been around since the commercial internet.
Mm-hmm.
It's a good timeline. Well, you're known throughout the whole industry as the guy who unravels Google patents. And I know I've been reading your blog for years. So I also recently learned that you're now director of search at GoFish Digital. Is that right?
Right. I joined them in September of last year.
So you're happy with the move?
Yeah. very much so.
It's kind of a loaded question. It's always like happy, you know. So director of search, what do you do? I know you must be busy, but, I mean, are you just – I see you've got so much time to research thing, and it kind of I'm a little jealous of it.
I sort of work around the clock. So
you don't sleep much is what you're saying.
I don't watch much. I do watch TV. I turn it on. It does its thing in the corner, and I look up every once in a while and watch a few minutes here and there. I used to be avid book reader, and I don't read as many of those as much as I used to. I read a lot of stuff online, though, and actually, I'm insanely curious. I want to find out how everything works, including search engines.
Yeah.
So
you were probably one of those kids who took apart radios, right?
What's a radio? We never had one long enough.
Yeah. Well, what kind of educational background have you had that lends itself to interpreting patents the way that you do? I bet you weren't an art major in college.
I was an English major, which one of my favorite classes was actually a class on literary criticism, where we deconstructed stuff people wrote and try to get a better sense of it. One of my favorite books was one called Modern Practical Criticism, where the author actually looked at the ways students criticized works to try to get a sense of the different approaches that they used. And in a way, that's sort of like what we do these days, trying to understand user behavior and the way people treat search engines and how they treat web pages they visit, what they click on, what they scroll down and spend time on, how much they like or dislike different sites, and how much satisfaction they get out of them. And, you know, different people have different ways of interpreting things and criticizing things. So that was good education, good training. I went from an undergraduate degree in English to law school. Had some thoughts of potentially practicing environmental law, and it ended up being, along with constitutional law, the environmental law class I took ended up being one of my favorite classes, and I worked as a teaching assistant for the professor who taught the class. And the project that he brought me in on to help him with was actually assessing and using electronic databases to determine natural resource damages. So, you know, this was around the time that the web was actually starting up, and I was exploring different electronic databases people used to understand and assess damages to things like, say, for instance, the Exxon Valdez case or the BP case. You know, how do you determine how much you might try to sue somebody for? It's pretty interesting.
Yeah, well, that definitely seems, it's so interesting how life is just kind of hands you one thing and then another, and you never think this is where you're going to end up, but you just do.
The detours we take lead you to some strange, unexpected places. I got out of law school and got a job working at the highest level trial court in the state as an intern to the staff attorney. And once the 3 months of that was up, I was asked by court administrators if I'd like to stay and work as a legal administrator and help try to improve the court. And I said yes. And that brought me through 14 years of first as a legal administrator and then as a technical administrator, because I had a couple friends teach me how to build computers about halfway through. And I learned so much that people at the court noticed whenever they had a problem with a computer, I could usually fix it within minutes. And if they relied upon the Judicial Information Center people, it could be days.
Right.
So one day the court created a new technical administrator position, and I went into work one morning and found three copies of the job posting on my desk. Said, someone's sending me a message. I should fill this out.
Well, I can. So then I don't have to ask why Google patents. I mean, you're so well known for like just digging into a patent and really looking at what it can mean long term, and it's just brilliant, I have to say. So I see how the law and your whole background allows you to, you know, really get into that.
Well, that brought me maybe 90% of the way there, but there are two types of lawyering positions you can take where you're allowed through most state bar professional responsibility results. You're limited in the type of specializations you can say that you might have as a lawyer. You can't say, like, I'm an expert in family law. I specialize in personal injury, stuff like that. You can't say that. You can say, I'm an expert in patent law, or I'm an expert in admiralty law. Patent law is the other specialization, and that's because it tends to be fairly complex. A lot of people who go into patent law have technical backgrounds. They were engineers or whatever. I unfortunately wasn't, but given my interest in, like, taking things apart and seeing how they work, and maybe not always putting them back together. After I started doing SEO, I was an in-house SEO, and one site I worked for, geography, was really, really important. And I came across a patent from Google that had just been released not too long before that dealt with showing up better in search results for geographically related content. So I read it, and this one was one of those few patents that, like, clearly expresses how it works, as long as you skip past some of the legalese. And so I started applying stuff, and it actually worked really well. I shared it with some other people on a forum that I was an administrator at, and it worked really well for them. So I started reading a lot more patents. And some of them were, like, really easy to understand, and some of them were a lot harder. One involved setting up your pages so that Google might pull definitions from your pages and link back to your page to attribute the definition to you.
Right.
And so I tried that one, and it worked.
So you spent a lot of time researching and explaining the semantic web. And I know this because, you know, you've got a library of written resources, but also I caught your timeline analysis of it as recently at PubCon.
Mm-hmm.
Can you explain what semantic web actually is for us, like, normal humans?
Okay. So I've been doing SEO for a long time, and an industry that's related to the SEO industry but a little bit younger is the semantic web industry, with people adding additional data to their web pages, like schema markup, that it's code that you don't necessarily see on the pages themselves. But it's a direct communication with the search engines because it uses a specific format. It's easy for search engines to find it on your pages and understand what it means. Normally, when Googlebot comes to a web page and it grabs the content, the text, the pictures, and so on from a page, it's got to do some analysis. It's got to try to understand what the words on your page mean, how they relate to each other, and so on. So when you add schema markup, you're adding an additional layer of information that provides a more structured format to the information. It's a lot easier for a search engine to understand. Google, Yahoo, Yandex, and Bing, or Microsoft, adopted schema.org like 3 years ago. And it can be used by any of those, and they are using it. And there are a number of different schemas that apply to specific industries. And they've been working with people to try to build schema for certain types of industries. For instance, one type of schema that just came out within the past month or so, or it's been worked on and was planned on coming out within the past month or so, was automotive. And it helps describe how to mark up pages that information about the automotive industry comes out. So if you want to label certain types of things, you can use metadata to do that. And a search engine can come along, sweep through your site. You know, it's like the difference between letting a search engine crawl your website or letting a search engine grab an XML file from your website that has a sitemap on it. You know, the one is search engine having to try to crawl through everything. The other is search engine grabbing one file and saying, okay, right, these are all the URLs for the website. So, you know, because you've written that XML sitemap directly for the search engine in a format that makes it really, really, really easy for them to grab and look and analyze and so on, you've possibly potentially saved them a lot of time and saved yourself a lot of time.
Right. You've also, done what you can to ensure that things aren't lost in translation.
Mm-hmm. So you've actually have two different methods there. The more human-like method of crawling each page by page, or the computer-like method of having one file. Well, you're sort of doing the same thing with schema.
Right.
You've got content on your page that humans can read, that a search engine can crawl and grab and analyze and index, and you've got the behind-the-scenes schema, and it's important to try to be really consistent between the two.
So the schema and the, you know, marking up your site and the rich snippets and all the things that come from that, a lot of people feel like it's a double-edged sword. I mean, they're giving the search engines all this information, they're spending the time, they're marking up their stuff, and then more and more, the rich snippets are coming out in the search results, and people are losing traffic because people, you know, you've got searchers on, searching something on Google, and they're finding what they want directly in the search results and not having to actually click through to a page, which I'm sure you understand completely. So, I mean, do you still think it's worth, I mean, you can't you can't, you know, swim against the tide. You've got to mark up your site. Is it worth the risk?
So I've heard people raise that argument, and people say, well, Google's stealing from me.
Right.
And, you know, if the business model that you've built is based upon how tall Abraham Lincoln was or where George Washington was born, maybe your business model wasn't really that strong.
Right. You know, that's exactly the take that we've been, you know, explaining to our members at Search Engine News, is that, you know, don't be generalized. Get in depth. You know, really get into a topic. Because if it is, what's the tallest tree in the world?
Right.
You need to keep going, you know, be unique and really get down to it. So, you know, your advice is the same as what we're saying, is don't be general, you know, really dive into a topic and give people more than just the surface information, because they'll actually click through and
yeah. I mean, imagine you provide contracting services for, say, let's say the state of Virginia. And you've got different pages for, there are like 90-some counties here. So let's say you create a different page for each of the counties. You don't just, like, create a template and, like the old Mad Libs game where you have sort of blanks and you fill them in as you go along. Insert county name here. Insert major city name here. Insert building code number here and so on. If you build a site like that as a contractor, you say you provide services to people in Virginia everywhere, you put case studies particular to that location for each county. You put some of the building code information, maybe some of the information about historic zoning laws and things like that in each stuff. You show pictures from work that you've done for each of those places. You're not so concerned with people grabbing the information that you've put on those pages. You want them to see that you have expertise, you know what you're doing, you've worked in that area. People can see from testimonials that you know what you're doing. So you're providing the contracting services. You're not providing information services, but you're putting the information on the pages so that Google can grab it and show it off.
Right. So you're creating yourself, building yourself up as an authority, an industry leader, and, that makes sense. Go ahead.
So if Google shows, like a knowledge panel where it pulls a bit of your information in, regarding a certain location and links back to you, you're creating a pathway to your site that way.
Right. So your advice with, like you just said, with Knowledge Panel and, you know, we got Google Answers that are coming out more and more. So your advice to help, you know, site owners stay relevant and continue to receive the levels of traffic they're accustomed to is, you know, don't scratch the surface. You know, get in depth and, you know, really dig into a topic.
Right, right. Like I said with that definitions patent from years ago, I tried to be the person whose definition showed up on the top of organic search results with a link back to the site, because if I could compete only for that top spot above organic results, why not try?
Right. Well, and Google has said recently that, you know, they link back to, with the Google Answers, if it's not a, I don't want to quote them, but a commonly known fact, like who is the first president of the United States, they won't send a link from their source. But if it's something a little bit more obscure, like what's the oldest tree in the world, then they'll link back to the site itself. So, again, if your whole business model revolves around how tall Abraham Lincoln was, you're in trouble. I'm going to work out for you. So, what I want to ask you, if there's three things, you know, getting onto this, you know, rich snippets or, you know, schema markup and all that, if there's three things you could tell, you know, our members to be sure that they have in place on their sites in order to be successful, you know, 2015 and beyond, what would it be? What would those be?
Okay, one of the important things about schema is that the schema that exists is industry specific. There's going to be more schema being created. If you're a industry subject matter expert, you can actually get involved with people at schema.org and help them build it. If you look at schema for a specific industry, they try to include information that search engines think are going to actually be searched for by people. So look at the schema. Even if you don't have the ability to mark up your pages right now, look at the type of information they're suggesting that you include and try to include that on your pages. Even if you don't necessarily mark it up right now, just having it may help you.
Right.
So that's one of them. Look at the schema for clues on how you create content. Now semantic web markup is only one element of what I try to do. One of the other things with the semantic web that I'm trying to do right now is what I call an entity audit, where I look at the an entity is a specific person, place, or thing. It's a distinct, unique person, place, or thing. So George Washington is an entity. You know, guy down the street, nameless guy down the street, isn't an entity. Okay, I did an entity audit for an apartment complex in Virginia, and one of the things I did was look up the city that the apartment was in, and in Wikipedia, and all the facts that were relevant to that city that might be helpful to add to the website for the apartment complex. Yeah, so an apartment complex, one of the things that you can use to market and sell it is the location. So what was unique about this location for this apartment complex? One of the things they talked about a little bit but didn't mention much was that it had an elevator directly to the metro underneath it that spread out throughout D.C., through parts of southern Maryland and northern Virginia, including like 18 different Smithsonian museums that are totally free. So if you're advertising an apartment complex, you want to advertise to people who have kids. And one of the things you can do is include on the page what schools are nearby, which they didn't have, things like entertainment and education opportunities, like being able to go to all these Smithsonians, which they didn't have, information about other things that could be found on the metro, which was less than 5 minutes away by that elevator. And so I'm saying this is an entity audit because it's identifying and surfacing content that could be added to the site that might be really useful. That metro is right there. Put information on the website about getting around by metro, by the different things you can go to without having to drive there. Make a frequently asked questions section on the website where you include things like where the nearest schools are, where the nearest daycare facilities are, where the post office is at, other things like that. Fill out and create stuff that actually helps use the location to sell an apartment.
Yeah, no, that makes perfect sense. It would be interesting. Yeah, I mean, what you're saying is building out a complete and like a full profile for specific, you know, people, place, or things, whatever it is within your industry, whatever it is you're working on, you know, make it completely full. You're saying check out the whole nine yards of it, and it makes perfect sense.
So that idea of completely identifying interesting facts and attributes related to the entities that you might talk about on your website. So that's sort of my number two takeaway. My number three takeaway, and this surfaced in another entity audit for a different client at a school that had an online degree program, and they were trying to have that online degree program found. They're in a small city in Virginia that they share with West Virginia. And within 2 miles of the school was a Virginian school. Within 2 miles of it was a West Virginian school that was also named after the city. Yeah, one was city name, state, or city name, West Virginia, college, whatever. So the potential for these to be confused existed. They had almost exactly the same name. They were near each other. It's like seeing two different Starbucks across the street from each other in New York City and looking up the addresses and, you know, are they really two different Starbucks or did somebody just make a mistake on the address of one of them? How do you tell? Yeah. So these kids would, like, play Frisbee together. They would have picnics together. They went to different schools with the same name. You look one of them up in Google, our client showed up in a knowledge panel, but down at the bottom of it was a little link to see also, and then a link to the other school.
Right.
Okay. You look at the search results and see which school shows up when you just type the name of the city and then the word college. And both of them show up. So how do you make yours show up, especially when you're trying to push their online degree program, which wasn't mentioned but possibly could have been in site links to maybe distinguish it from the other school. So the other thing is make sure that you don't have stuff out there that might confuse your potential audience. You know, is there something else that has a very similar name that may be nearby? You know, the different online degree programs, they had 4 different names for them in a 6-year period. And some of the old online degree program pages hadn't been taken down from the site and were no longer relevant. They had some new offerings, and it was hard for a person to tell. Nonetheless, a search engine, and it had to be confusing Google completely.
So what you're saying is basically when you're doing an entity audit that you need to really take a step back and look at it from a user perspective and make sure there's nothing out there that's confusing people, you know, kind of do a just like they do in local search when you go to optimize a local client is that you want to do data cleanup. You don't want to give 4 old addresses and 2 old phone numbers. You know, you need to really get in and clean it up and be very clear about, you know, your name.
Mm-hmm.
Pick a page from, you know, anyway. But, yeah, I mean, stick with your branding. Stick with your naming. Don't keep jumping, you know, through hoops and stuff. And I was going to make fun of, I was going to make fun of Bing a little bit with their inability to stick with anything. Since Bing, I should say. They definitely have stuck with that name so far. But, yeah, I mean, be true to your brand is what you're saying. And don't
right.
your customers with thinking, oh, this is a new name that's trending. Let's go with that.
If you offer SEO services and you also offer web design services, and you advertise in some directories that you're an SEO and other directories that you're a web designer, and you stop offering the web design, only offer SEO, but you don't change those directories around, you may not rank as highly as an SEO firm as you could if you did make changes. So you want to be consistent with the information about your business, about your site throughout the web, across everything that might contain information about it.
Right. So that kind of goes back to, you know, the authorship snippets and all of the markups. And then, you know, where obviously those are gone. Those have been taken away in the sense that, you know, Google is claiming they're not using them. But at the same time, our advice has been that you know, author rank or, you know, basically authority as a person, as an entity, is still very much important. And the profile that you're putting out for yourself and for your business, and you're putting those things out there for Google and everyone else to grab, is extremely important. Is that something that you agree with?
Oh, absolutely. I did write a blog post about how Google might identify different entities and especially entities that share the same name but were different people. That one used the example of Michael Jackson. And a couple of years ago, there was a deputy secretary of the Department of Homeland Security by the name of Michael Jackson. So you had two people who should have been well-known. I think the singer was a lot more well-known than the Homeland Security guy. But,
yeah.
But you had
that top spot on Google.
Yeah, so you search for Michael Jackson, you don't expect to see some Washington bureaucrat in the knowledge panel.
Right.
So how does Google distinguish between the two? It's going to make sure that if somebody asks what groups Michael Jackson was a member of, that the answer is the Jackson 5 and not the Department of Homeland Security.
Right. Well, and those, and you're giving out those tips and clues. I mean, that's your job as a SEO or you know, somebody working on that, is to give out those clues for Google to get the question, to get the answer right.
Yeah, pretty much. It's like, you know, I come across a lot of things in patents that people say, why do you do all that work? But, you know, when I get a phone call from somebody I'm working with who says, hey, our client just called, and they were ranking really well in organic search, and they were ranking really well in local search, and their organic search result disappeared last night, doesn't exist anymore. And I ask what the query term was and go look it up, and the number one result for the query term was their site number one in local search. It's like, they're doing really, really, really good there. I don't see the organic result. I wrote a blog post yesterday about how Google may, when it finds sites that are doing really well in local search and really well in organic search, they may remove the organic result and boost the local result. And that was a textbook case of it. It really was. And being able to get back to the client and say, hey, this is what happened. Here's the patent. There's nothing that would have reduced your organic ranking that we can see. So it's likely Google merged the two. Being able to give that type of answer is really nice.
Yeah, no, I bet you it is. I'll definitely be reading that blog post, making sure that – thanks for that. it's always good. It's always, you know, to have the answer. It's like, we didn't do anything wrong. You didn't do anything wrong. There's no penalty, you know, because that's, everyone's so scared of penalties and everything that's been going on because of everything that Google's been doing so aggressively over the last 18 months or on that, you know. And stepping away from semantic search for a minute, what do you feel has been the biggest game changer for businesses trying to get traffic from Google this year, 2014?
Good question.
Dumped you, huh?
I like the semantic approach. I've been seeing more and more and more things from Google that indicate that they're pursuing it more, including question answering and query answering results in the same snippet for some things, so that they not only include a snippet from a page, but also facts, specific facts for that page. I think carousels might be my answer, though.
That's a good answer. I would have to say, yeah, that's a great answer. And I'm sure if Mary Bowling, our local search expert, was on the call, she would just already be getting frustrated. You say carousel around her, and she starts like, what a mess that they've made. I mean, that's, yeah. They're trying to clear up their local search platform, and they're trying to clean it up, but, yeah, carousels.
Well, the carousels, have to be a little bit frustrating because they don't follow a specific ordering. You're like number one, number two, number three down a page. Instead, you're in that thing that flows across the top. And you have to be concerned about the picture that might show up for your business. Uh-huh. Sometimes it does. Sometimes you get like a little map location instead without a picture. You say, doesn't it like any of my pictures that I've put up online? It also shows ratings for places. Yeah, which is it's a good thing. I think if you have a business with an actual physical location and you can show up in a carousel result like that, it's a good thing to get.
Yeah, no, it definitely is. You seem to spend a lot of time working with local businesses. Is that true? I mean, it seems like your answer.
I work with a real big mix.
Okay, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right now I'm working specifically today. I'm working with an e-commerce website, but we've worked with some scientific type sites, that are maybe business to business, that make certain types of products that other businesses use. We've worked with, some medical people, because we're near Washington, D.C., and there's actually a lot of startups in the area.
Yeah. You get quite an interesting group of people out in that area.
Yeah.
Quite the swatch of everything out there for sure.
I read something today about a company that Google acquired, and I'm reading through what they created, thinking of one of our clients and how close it is to something they've been selling. It's not exactly the same thing, but it's really, really close. And I'm thinking, you know, that could have been our client.
Like, why wasn't it my client that sold to Google? Yeah. Well, that's a good place to be, though. At least you have clients like that. You know, you say you're working with e-commerce people. Real quick, you know, I know the whole secure site, HTTPS, kind of, I wouldn't call it a situation, but, you know, there's a lot of back and forth about it, whether or not to switch a site over and all of that, you know, because it's a site move. But, I mean, how are you making that advice? Are you telling your e-commerce or actually any, because it obviously affects all websites, are you guys pushing that switch over, or are you just waiting until somebody's doing some other kind of site move and then saying, okay, let's go to secure at the same time?
I've always sort of been of the opinion that HTTPS was a good idea for any site engaging in e-commerce, at least on their ordering pages, where they're actually exchanging information with a client, and they want to keep it secure. They haven't really pushed many people to change their sites over whole to HTTPS, even though sites like American Express have shown that you can rank real well if you are completely HTTPS. They've been HTTPS for a while.
You know, with Google putting up those warnings, we call them scare screens, but, you know, people are on their mobile device and they're clicking through, not even only on mobile, but on desktop as well. And before you get through, you click on a search result, and before you get through, you get the screen that says, you know, this site is not private. You know, it's like a privacy warning, not a security warning, which is one of the reasons why we recommend, at Search Engine News, we recommend if you're doing a site move, go ahead and switch over to HTTPS, because it's going to become, you know, more and more of an issue now that Google is, I guess, endorsing it or pushing it a little bit harder.
Yeah, and they are pushing it. I don't know that it makes the web a more secure place exactly in the way that Google's pushing or promoting, but it likely does in most instances. And you do want to avoid those types of warnings.
At all costs.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So you said that the carousel was the biggest game changer for people in 2014. What do you think it will be in 2015? Any idea? Get your crystal ball out for me, would you, really quick, and blow it off, you know, dust it off, and tell me.
I can give you some general trends. I don't know that I can give you something specific.
Well, I can't say I won't quote you on it, because that's really not going to happen. I'm definitely going to quote you. No pressure. No, I mean, you know what you're saying right now. You kind of answered it before. I mean, you kind of said, you know, really pay attention. You know, get your schema together.
Mm-hmm.
If you have industry-specific schema, go and help them build it if they haven't yet. Brilliant.
Right.
You know, entity auditing, extremely important. Look at things from a user perspective as well. Make sure you're not putting out confusing data. So, you know, clean up any data. Be really specific about who you are. Don't say you're this person, a web designer, and then say you're an SEO over here. You know, stick to, you know, who you are in this. So those are, I mean, really big. Do you think that schema and, I mean, obviously Google Answers and the Knowledge Graph is just getting bigger and bigger. I mean, do you think that that's just going to completely take over the top of search results?
I think we're going to see some of that happening. One of the interesting patents that came out this past year, actually there were three versions of it. I'm still working through the second and third version, seeing what they changed, because they're not saying that they were continuation patents. All three patents came out at the same time, so it's really sort of odd. Matthew Brown is
on to them. Do you think they're throwing out three at a time because they know that you are reading everyone? We've got an interpreter for SEOs. They're like, oh, Bill's going to read this. Throw out three different ones and only change like four words, but make them like 100 pages long each.
I think it's too expensive for them to purposefully target me with a pad. So when Sergey Brin filed what I'd probably say is Google's second patent, which was on understanding patterns and relationships involving entities on the web, he filed that in 1999. He filed it as under Google's name as a small business entity. It cost $75 to file it. It doesn't cost $75 anymore.
You gotta add a bunch of zeros, huh?
Yeah. They're not getting a small business entity break. The amount of time it actually takes to do the research and the money to pay the lawyers who might go through that multiple times and make it really, really hard to read.
Make it really, really hard to read.
That's their job, I think.
It is. It's great to hear you say that, though. It is great to hear you say that.
you know, it might cost $100,000 or so to fully file and prosecute a patent, you know, which is if they're going to do three different ones, for purposes of confusing me, they didn't need to have to bother. Okay,
yeah.
So this patent is the one where you might be able to do things like answer a query along the lines of what movie did Robert Duvall star in, where he says he likes the smell of napalm in the morning?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so instead of actually doing a web search query, finding the words movie, Robert Duvall likes the smell of napalm in the morning, some of those other words, Google might look up that information in its knowledge base. It might say, okay, we're looking for entity types of movies. We're looking for ones where Robert Duvall is one of the actors, and we're looking for a scene that involves napalm. Here it is, Apocalypse Now. So they're not matching the keywords They're looking up the facts. And when you have Google looking for facts in a knowledge base like that to find answers, when they show the search results, they say, okay, the answer for this query is Apocalypse Now. So they do the search on Google and show for Apocalypse Now and show those results. Right? So you have a YouTube scene of Apocalypse Now, you have the Internet Movie Database result, you have the Wikipedia result, and so on. Those are your choices. So it's not really transparent that they didn't search for your keywords, but search for the facts in your query.
The knowledge vault and all of that. They're getting better and it's tying together relationships of.
Yeah, we don't need the knowledge vault either for that. It's still just the knowledge graph. The knowledge vault is a specific project that may help improve the knowledge graph. But Google actually came out, sent an email to Greg Sterling at Search Engine Land a few weeks ago saying, after he wrote about the knowledge graph, saying, that's just one of many projects going on at Google. It's not necessarily the replacement for the knowledge graph. But this idea that if you can capture specific facts about entities and Google can search for those facts to find an answer means that you aren't necessarily matching strings of keyword phrases anymore, which means if you're a small business and you've got information about facts about entities and facts about them and so on, Google can search your pages for those facts and find an entity and return your page as a result without you necessarily doing SEO for the specific string of words in the specific order that somebody might have searched for them in.
Yeah, that makes sense. It definitely does.
So that sort of changes around SEO a lot.
Yeah, it does. Keywords are becoming, it's not just a string of keywords anymore. I mean, keyword research isn't what it was 10 years ago or even 5 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
It's understanding relationships and where your business model fits in with those, the whole industry itself, not just saying, oh, we're going to optimize this page for these 3 keywords. It's not going to work anymore. At least it's not going to continue to work is what you're saying.
Right. So if you're a lawyer who handles cases of people driving while intoxicated, and you're in a state where driving while intoxicated is referred to as DUI, driving under the influence, instead of DWI, you better have DUI on your page about representing people who are driving while drinking. It's a different thing in each state. Know what it is in your state. Make sure it's on your page that way.
Right. Yeah. So definitely. Yeah. Keyword research is just always kind of a thorn in every, SEO's side. I mean, it seems like it's just getting harder and harder because people are into what used to work doesn't anymore, and you can't just look at it and white anymore. It's very gray. It's been humanized, I guess, another way of putting it.
It's still sort of essential, and you still want to do it because even small differences can make a really, really big difference. I worked with one client who rented out a certain type of facility, and they were expensive operations and buildings, but the type of place commonly could be referred to as one compound word or as two words. And if you looked in Google's keyword suggestion tool, when people searched for it as one word, there were about 800 searches a month under a direct exact match. When people search for it as two words, there were 10,000 searches a month. This website had the word all over its pages as one word.
and you probably looked like a genius saying, you know, matter of fact, let's just change this.
Everywhere.
This one thing with hyphen, get rid of the hyphen, and we win.
Yeah.
Oh, that's awesome. Well, you know, I've probably taken up far too much of your time today, so we should probably wrap this up, unless there's anything that you'd like to add before I...
I think we're good. I'm happy with what we've talked about so far.
Well, thanks again for taking the time, and I know that you've done a lot to inspire those of us in the trenches of the SEO industry over the years, especially as, you know, avid researchers. I know I speak for the entire Slam Ocean team when I say that you're welcome to write, talk, or even teach at Search Engine News anytime. Just let us know.
Thank you. Appreciate that.
Have a great day, Bill.
Oh, you too. Thank you, Christy.
I hope to talk to you soon. And if you have any more crazy patents, I hope to talk to you again soon. If you have any more, you know, crazy patents or anything else that you feel like sharing, you know how to get a hold of us.
Okay. Will do.
All right. Thanks, Bill. I hope your day gets better.
Same here. Bye now. Thanks.
All right. Bye.